a game face on. Get ready for the tip off. First pitch, puck drop, first swing, kickoff. Now your regular sports show. We bring the realest in the world of sports. You gotta hear it, see it, and feel it. On field, on court, wherever you're playing. Forget all the gimmicks, cause you're speaking on the game. Wall Street Strickland, E-Suite Watson. Giving y'all the latest in sports and what's popping. It's four quarters of absolute rawness. It's if you ever need support, knowing who's on the court, you call. From the pop fly save to the Super Bowl phase, it's from the first round seed to the top of the league, you know it's.
If you're listening, and you should, we want to give you a penny for your thoughts, because Wall Street and Suites, we do it the hard way.
Nah, you stole that. You stole it. I saw that someone.
J. Cole.
Right. Yeah. That was a good one, though.
You like that. You like that.
If you're not familiar, J. Cole, is that in a Cole Summer?
Yeah.
That? Yeah. Cole Summer has a great, intricate lyric. As
well,
you said,
it was cool, and I made that connection because of the book that we gave away on the other show.
On these courts? Heck, you know what?
We actually have an extra copy. We're going to give it away on the show, but what show are they listening to, sir?
All Balls Don't Bounce.
Episode 71. Episode George Papadopoulos.
Rest in peace.
Yes, Alex Karras from Webster.
There you go.
Or should we say Mongo? I've been making Mel Brooks references all
you
week.
Have. You've been on that Mel Brooks shit.
I'm just saying. But welcome. I am the entrepreneur. Wall Street, Will Strickland, and he is...
Dwayne Sweets Watson, a.k.a. the Swishing Dish and Condition.
Yes, sir.
A.k.a. Swiss Franks, a.k.a. the Cupcake Champ.
Yes, sir.
Back at it again.
And it's, you know, it's going to be a good show. We have a special guest on.
Yes, we do.
Coming on to talk boxing with us.
A little pugilism.
Yeah, some fighting.
That covers the whole gamut.
No doubt. But, you know, let's... Let the people know where they can find us, sir.
As they can, each and every episode. Find us on Twitter, at ABD Media.
I didn't think about the other show.
No, I was thinking about Facebook. That's why. Okay. I was going to say slash. I'm like, as well as Facebook.com/ABD Media.
Yes, sir.
Definitely hit us up at allballsdontbounce@gmail.com. Remember that email address, because you're probably going to have to hit us up for this book promotion when we do it later in the show.
Yeah.
iTunes Music Store. As well as
Stitcher Radio. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And allballsdontbounce.com.
Well, if you didn't know already, we also have another show.
Yes, we do have another show.
A basketball show for the News, Views, and Truths.
Listen to the show more than once, you're probably aware of that.
Yeah, that we have a show called One on One.
With Will and Dwayne.
Yes, on TSN Radio here in Canada. But you can find it on Stitcher as well.
You can't throw it yourself when you're supposed to do that.
My bad.
You can also find it on
Stitcher Radio.
The first guy was cooler.
I didn't want to duplicate. Gotcha. You can't replicate that greatness.
There you go. Yeah, we got a basketball show. We talk straight hoops each and every week.
Well, you know.
But now we talk hoops and a little more.
Wow. This is true. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk athletics.
Athletics.
Yes, we talk athletics.
Also known as track and field.
Yes.
For my North American peoples.
Well, you know, it's because of Dwayne that we have the respect for athletics here.
I think I've just kind of immersed this whole British culture into the show where we talk about football.
I'm not mad at it.
I know. Footy. Yo, we're cultured. We're refined, man.
That we are. As I dig my nose and go on to the next story. There's a story. If you hadn't seen it, out of the state of Texas, that bastion of sensitivity.
What does the T stand for in Texas?
Tolerance? What does the N stand for in Texas? I don't want to say it on the show. But anyway, there's a Texas track and field team for Columbus High.
Yeah, Columbus High.
And one of their 4x100 meter team, they won a race to qualify for states. Mm-hmm. And one of the athletes, Derek Hayes, He killed it.
Yeah, he murdered.
And after he finished his leg of the race, he looked up to the heavens and he pointed. Well, these geniuses at the University Interscholastic League, or UIL,
right,
in Texas, said that him pointing at the sky was excessive.
Excessive celebration.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they disqualified them from going to state.
Okay, I need footage. No. I kind of need footage because I would agree. I would agree that it, you know, it, depending on, I mean, it isn't. He pointed the sky. It's very simple. Was he jumping up and down? Was he like whooping it up and pointing the sky? Or did he just do the whole Sammy Sosa point the sky?
He just looked up and pointed and he was done.
That's not excessive. That's bullshit.
Well, so what's the rationale behind it? They don't want this team to go?
Well, I can't. Why? If it's a casual gesture, I can't understand. It's not like he got down on his knees and did the whole,
like, you know, Tim Tebow.
Right.
He didn't do that. He just pointed up to the sky. So, whatever, man. It's ridiculous, but it's the world we live in.
Sorry,
today.
I'm going to quote the superintendent, Robert O'Connor, and he said, "I don't think that the situation was technically a terrible scenario as far as his action, but the action did violate the context of the rule."
It's not that much. It's not excessive,
dude.
And hopefully these kids get an opportunity to run in states. And I hope they win.
Well, not this year. The team will not get another chance to qualify for the meet. That was the last opportunity.
So they're not going to reinstate. They may reinstate them. From what I understand, they're appealing the decision. And I don't think it's...
I don't know. I mean, based on what the superintendent said, he's admitting that it wasn't excessive, but it violated the rule. And if it's if it's a matter of enforcing the rules, they could easily keep them out, man.
If George Bush was the head of this thing, these kids would be in on death row.
Yeah.
Texas is terrible. Whatever. And my son and my daughter live there. So, anyway. Let's go to the pitch.
Yes.
We normally don't have, like, happy stories about the pitch, whether we're in England or Europe.
We never have that.
And I feel bad because I know you love it, but there was a referee in Utah who was punched by a youth player.
Right.
In a recreational soccer league. It wasn't even like competitive for money or anything like that. 17-year-old punched this referee, and the guy whose head...
Ricardo Portillo was a...
Yeah. He went into a coma and he eventually died.
Wow.
So this kid he's
17 years old.
I mean, he's done. There's no way you can justify what he did. I understand crazy soccer moms and, you know, mad players who flop all the time and all that stuff.
Right.
You don't hit a referee, man. And especially, you know, I guess when you think about it, the kid's not thinking, I'm going to hit him and he's going to die or fall into a coma or something. But that's the risk
the thing is, too, what happens is, it was one punch. It wasn't even like it was a fight. It was
one hitter quitter.
He was issued a yellow card, and he hauled off and knocked him in the face. And, that's tragic. But
sorry to hear that, and best of luck to Portillo's kids who are distraught about the loss.
You know, you don't think that, you know, refereeing in a recreational game, that's unfortunate.
I wanted to say something bad about Joey Crawford, but I'll leave that alone.
When keeping it real goes wrong.
It truly does. in the state of Texas, once again, a baseball player for the University of Texas used his teammate's pee to pass a drug test, and then he failed it because they found Adderall in his teammate's pee. So I want to know how this conversation went down. Yo, money, like, check it, right? I have to take they got to piss me.
Right.
I know I've been smoking weed and doing whatever. Can you loan me some of your piss?
Okay.
If that ever happens between me and you, punch me in the face. If I ever come asking you for pee
No, but the punch in the face is for, like, yeah, you can use my pee, but I've got shit in it. Like, I mean, that guy's just as dumb.
This is stupid. Corey Knubel, who was a pitcher on the University of Texas team, who I guess just got Roger Clemens, asked for, you know, his teammate's pee and came back dirty.
Wow.
You know, come back with a cloud of piss, word the big boy.
There you go.
So what's the cautionary tale here, Dwayne?
That if I borrow your piss, I shouldn't, what, I shouldn't,
no!
I shouldn't blow up your spot.
No, get baby pee, just like they did on Wire. It's the only clean pee around.
Where is he getting baby pee from?
It's the only clean pee around. Find somebody who's selling baby
pee. Ring
no, you don't know a baby pee dealer anywhere? I'm just saying.
I don't think they have any in Texas. We're in Baltimore for that.
You know, we talked about baseball, and Torrey Hunter, who plays for the Detroit Tigers, his son is seeking $40 million in a lawsuit for something, for being accused of a crime. Because it somehow he's saying that because of being accused,
right,
that he lost an opportunity to get scholarships from schools that he was being recruited by to play football, including, you know, LSU, Oregon, Arkansas, West Virginia, Utah.
I'm not mad at that.
But all right, here's the deal. So the young man's name, Darius McClinton Hunter,
right,
files a $40 million lawsuit. What is the basis of the lawsuit? How do you get to $40
million? Listen, only in America.
Pre-criming.
No, but you guys have, I'm saying you guys, because you guys super crazy amounts of dough, which never mean anything.
Well, it means something and you settle for less. So it's the art of the deal, too.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. But, you know, we see happen all the time with players that get bad reps and it sticks with them forever. They're bad. See, this happened. Remember that shit happened, whatever.
Brian Bank.
Exactly. So I don't think it's wrong from, I mean, the value, like it could be a dollar.
All right, but here's the thing. I want to know how he came to that $40 million. If I'm thinking about it and I'm looking at the story, I'm going, okay, I lost out on money I could have made by being drafted into the pros if I had played X amount of years in college. Also, because he's the son of a professional athlete already, he automatically has a certain degree of cachet, does he not?
Oh, of course.
Whether he plays the same sport or not.
But he's also 17, so, you know, he could easily next season.
Well, if they've already rescinded the opportunity for him to play at those schools,
okay, but
that's taking potential money off his plate.
But what if he were to win a lawsuit? You think the schools would be interested again?
I don't know, but he'd be sitting on dough and he'd be
exactly. He's good.
You know who's not happy?
Who's that?
And normally sharks aren't happy, but Greg Norman, the shark,
yes,
is very disappointed with the drug testing. I guess
protocol.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very good word.
Thank you.
And golf and pro golf. That doesn't make sense to me. Here's golf. Here, drugs. Why do they need drug testing for these guys? Have you seen John Daly ever before?
Yes, but he's not even, you know. But I mean,
they had a guy named the Walrus.
Well, what's
Craig Statler? So
if you look at the average golfer, they're average human being, you know, built.
But you know who? This is really not about DJ Singh, who was under investigation. Yeah. He admitted that he used
deer antler, IGF, whatever.
Was
the deer antler stuff?
Oh, you mean the Ray Lewis spray?
Yeah, Ray, exactly. That's what it was.
And he used a spray. He admitted to it.
Yep.
And it's not even so.
IGF-1 is what it's called, sorry.
But here's the thing. This thing from Norman is not even a shot at Vijay Singh. You know who it's a shot at?
Tiger?
Yeah. I'm not reaching with this because, all right, Tiger was the first golfer that you know of that was so into his fitness, and people talk about how much stronger he was than every other golfer out there because of his regimen.
Yeah, but
and you know he hates Tiger too.
That's fair, but Tiger has been a golfer since a young lad.
I'm just trying to tell you that they talked about the disparity between Tiger and the rest of the field when he was younger and coming in.
But you got to remember though, Tiger. I mean, I didn't follow golf till Tiger. I knew who was big, like Nicholas and all stuff, whatever. But Tiger came in as a young man, and you know, the epitome of fitness, whatever.
But part of that was the fact that
not because he was. I'm calling a reach on this one, man.
Maybe I am reaching, but if you guys think we're reaching.
But more importantly, though, the older guys are probably trying to keep up, and that's where this is coming into play.
And this is why I'm saying that while it's Vijay Singh who did it, there's something that harkens back to when Tiger came in and changed the way that golfers look at Roy McIlroy now. All these guys have weight regimen programs now that they never had before Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
So this is why it's more of a shot to me. If you guys think this is a reach, you know that you can reach us. allballsdontbounce@gmail.com.
Or at ABD Media on Twitter.
Yes, sir.
Back to Vijay Singh, though. So Vijay Singh tested positive, admitted it, but it was a minimal amount.
Was it like when they tested Usain Bolt's yam and banana and found out he had to eat 5,000 pounds?
It wasn't like that. But it wasn't a lot, but he's actually suing the PGA.
For
$40 million.
Are you serious?
I made a number. But it's probably something like $20
million. Why is he suing him?
I have to pull it up. I listened to it on the radio. I heard him talking about it. But basically, it was how... For damaging his name.
Right.
Dragging him through this whole case.
So slander and libel and all that.
Well, exactly. Reputation, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But now you know what's real when golfers are getting this, performance.
Hey, it's really real, but... You know what's what does that mean when people say really real?
It's like extra.
Is it extra real for real for real? It's like, for real, son.
Yeah, for real for real.
Whatever. Congratulations to Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
I know, but he doesn't really learn.
You don't think he signed that prenup this time?
I don't know if he signed a prenup. I mean, it's like. Yeah, he's marrying a very attractive younger lady.
Yvette Prieto, Jordan now.
But why does he have to get married?
This is true.
Hey, I mean, I'm not mad, but...
Well, you didn't handle your player's handbook?
What's that?
The player's handbook.
I'm not familiar with what you
said. Yeah, right. Anyway.
Congrats.
Congrats to Jordan.
2,000 people.
Including Patrick Ewing. He stays with losing, don't he?
Yeah.
He always invites, I know he's cool with Patrick, but he did rub it in.
Yeah.
You don't think?
Yeah.
Real quick, there was some habitual line stepping going on by, someone who steps the lines a lot.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Brian Burke. You remember him?
Yeah. GM, president of Toronto Maple Leafs.
The Maple Leafs are in the playoffs. Toronto's going crazy right now.
Fucking crazy.
This dude is actually suing... He wants to sue people for making comments about him.
What kind of people, though? Twitter people.
Twitter people. They don't even have the real names. He's like, I'm going to investigate, at jackass.com or, whatever it is.
Yeah. At McNulty33.
Like, really?
Yeah.
He actually filed a lawsuit
against
people talking about slandering his name and saying why he lost his job in Toronto.
Well, they were saying that he got a TV personality, Hazel May.
She was still doing it.
She's back on Express Now. Where you been?
So is that her baby?
No.
We need to call Maury, son.
She's joined in on the suit too now.
Really?
Well, I can get some money.
Go on Maury. Let's get this shit cleared
There's
up.
There's no
right
baby now. Though. There's no baby.
So
they were saying that he got her pregnant and they took care of
her.
So she never got pregnant. I mean, she never had a baby.
That's easy enough to find out, too, if they really wanted to get at it.
Well, I don't know if McNulty33 has that forensic evidence to do so.
Well, I want to send happy birthday shouts out.
Yep.
To the big fundamental.
Yep.
Tim Duncan. Also, another Spur.
The Iceman.
He could finger roll. The Intimidator. Dale Earnhardt. Little rampant black redneckery on the show. Give it... out to Reginald.
Yes. Celebrating the anniversary of...
18 years ago.
8 points and 8 seconds.
Come on, man. It's ridiculous. He had a birthday, as well as Zeke, and not the one from Cabin Creek. Not Jerry West.
Isaiah Lord Thomas.
Yes, sir. Walter... Well, I don't want to use his real name. You know, as the only real sugar in boxing, I'm sure we'll talk about him later with Andy.
Yep.
Sugar Ray Robinson had a birthday.
Mm-hmm.
The Say Hey Kid, Willie Mays, arguably the best baseball player who ever lived.
Yep.
He had a birthday. Marty Brodeur, is he the greatest goalie ever?
Quite possibly.
He has the most wins.
Yeah.
And does that make him the best? Emmitt Smith.
No one can top Emmitt Smith. Emmitt Smith is like the bar for like pushing the limits of being.
I'm just saying. So, Marty Brodeur. Chris Paul, CP3. Will he stay in L.A.?
We'll talk about it later in basketball.
Very good. The man who created the modern position.
You put the voice on. I had to put the NFL Films voice on.
John Facenda, the man who defined modern quarterbacking in the NFL, Johnny Unitas, had a birthday, as well as Sonny Liston, the Bear. Mm-hmm. That's what Ali used to call him. Had a birthday, and of course, the greatest safety in football history, possibly.
The rhymes I got hit hard like Ronnie Lott.
You were setting that up, weren't you?
No, no, good. I wasn't.
I like the freestyle. I can't front. I can't front.
That's Alcoholics.
I know.
Oh, okay. It's not a freestyle. I borrowed the lines from someone else.
So it's a layaway style.
And on the show, our special guest, our Fistic Mystic, our man, Andy Fruman, also known as Grumpy Old Sport on Twitter.
Or Old Grumpy Sport.
No, it's Grumpy Old Sport.
Oh, you have a little typo here.
I did, but he's on the line with us. What's up, Andy?
Hey, not much, Will. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be on the show.
Run your bona fides. Let us know where you're from.
I write for Bad Left Hook, which is on the SB Nation Network, and I also write for The Cruelest Sport, which is on Fansided.
So I guess we can say that you are an expert in the physic arts.
I've been following boxing all my life, and I'm more of a fan of boxing history than the modern game, but, you know, I watch every week, and boxing's not what it used to be, but, you know, I'm a boxing addict, so I still watch.
Without question.
And then you fit right in with what we're talking about today.
Well, before we step into the squared circle, we're going to step into the octagon first and talk about a big match between Chael Sonnen and Johnny Bones Jones, the undisputed light heavyweight champion of the world. Light work. If it was Floyd Mayweather, he'd say all work is easy work. But he defeated Chael in this first round easily. And now the big, big match that everyone wants to see is between the guy who is the best pound-for-pound fighter in mixed martial arts, Anderson Silva, versus John Bones Jones.
Is that fight going to happen?
I have no idea. In terms of matchups that fans like to see, that seems to be the one. But, I mean, I can see why Silva would not be interested. You know, size matters in combat sports. There's a clear size edge there. There's a youth edge there. I'm not sure if I'm Silva that I'd like to get in the octagon with Jones.
I heard that Silva had said that, I mean, he has two fights left on his contract.
Yeah.
Obviously, I agree with you. I'm not sure if Silva really wants that fight, although he is unquestionably the best pound for pound. But there isn't a lot of people, much like in boxing, in Jones's class, to fight.
Right.
Which is why the Sonnen fight happened.
Right. I mean, Jones doesn't really have many challenges out there, so, you know, people want to see this fight. Honestly, I mean, I don't think Silva has that much of a chance, but, I mean...
Still, really? As far as,
you know what? I mean, he's just not big enough. I mean, you know, the physical aspect, I think, of MMA, when it comes to size, is I think it's more important even than boxing, because it's very hard to win a fight without actually coming together. I mean, a guy like Floyd can beat a bigger guy because the other guy's just never going to touch him.
Right.
But
right.
Once, you know, Silva and Jones come together and, you know, the wrestling comes into play,
size matters.
I think it's going to be a very hard night for Silva.
Well, you know what was the great part about it is that it would almost be like a passing of the torch. No matter if Silva can't lose, basically, is
true,
what I'm
true,
saying.
That's true.
Even in losing, because he's 37 years old, John Bone Jones is 23. And it's not even argued that Silva really is the best fighter in the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. You're right. But at the same time, though, it's like people still hold on to the last time they saw them in the ring.
And that's fine, too. But again, like I said, he can't lose no matter what happens, because the easiest way to look at this is, you know what? He had two fights left. He took the best fight out there. He gave his best if it happens. And he lost.
I don't agree with you. I think if Silva retires and doesn't take this fight, no one looks at Silva as a guy who's ducking John Jones.
Just no, because he beat everybody.
So if he walks away and doesn't take this fight, he probably comes out better than if he takes it. I don't know.
I don't know. But, you know, what is getting better from what I can see is boxing in Cuba. It's always been great, but now would it be just a bit better because, you know, our man El General, Fidel Castro, has actually loosened up and allowed, you know, pro boxing in Cuba. What's a, it's, he ended the ban on pro boxing in Cuba, which
true. It's a very limited form of pro boxing, though. It's, you know, it's the World Series of boxing. The fighters are still, you know, maybe not technically amateurs because they're getting paid, but, you know, these are amateur level fighters. And I mean, the World Series of boxing, I believe, is also a pathway to Olympic qualification. So I, you know, I wonder if maybe the Olympic qualification aspect of it is why Cuba is involved, as opposed to having this as a stepping stone towards actual professionals.
Well, you never know. I mean, and it is about the World Series of boxing, but if you look, you can look at it as a stipend because these guys can earn anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000 a month.
Plus, there's bonuses as well.
Like, yeah. Hey, $3,000 in a year for Cuban boxers is a lot. Yeah. If they got
that's
that.
That's true.
So, to have $3,000 a month, it's not just a stipend. I think it's a step toward, you know, relaxing those rules and seeing Cuban athletes having an opportunity on the global stage outside of the Olympics to compete.
And not being an idealist, but at the same time, maybe if there's that money there, people aren't going to try to defect all the time because it's like, you know what, I could still make a little money.
And be happy at home.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. And I mean, if that's the case, we might not be seeing, you know, we might not have seen a fighter like Guillermo Rigondeaux enter the pro game if he had an incentive to stay home. So
imagine if Teofilo Stevenson had an opportunity like this back in the 70s and had an opportunity even in the World Series of boxing to see someone like an Ali.
Yeah.
That would have been great. But
yeah, I mean, we really lost out with Stevenson because, I mean, skill-wise, for a big man, you know, you don't see skills like that. And, you know, it would have been something to see what he could have done in the, you know, the late 70s, early 80s against some of the American stars.
Why don't we go just a bit further down the Caribbean Sea and post up on the shores of Argentina and talk about Sergio Maravilla Martinez, who won a controversial decision over Martin Murray in a homecoming for Martinez. You watched the fight, I'm sure. I was scoring it as well. What do you think, man?
Martinez has looked kind of vulnerable the last couple years against Darren Barker, against Matthew Macklin. He had troubles in those fights. But,
who?
Barker and Macklin. Martinez had trouble.
Who? you get my point, I'm sure.
True. But the fact that he was struggling with those guys, I think, was a sign that he's getting older. And in both those fights, he was able to use his power to, you know, change the course of both fights. And against Murray, he was never able to do that. And, you know, I know, you know, people can point to the fact that he hurt his hand, but that's the second straight fight he's hurt his hand. He's hurt his knee. He's 38 years old. It's hard to see Martinez lasting much longer.
Well, I don't care what you say. If you land more shots than your opponent and you have a higher connect percentage and you actually knock your opponent down, that would mean, in most cases, that you win the fight. Would it not?
True, but I mean, the fight's in Argentina and this is boxing.
Oh!
No, he said it right there. And this is boxing.
Right. Right. Well, he's on shaking.
That's not to say that Argentina is any different from the United States or
Texas,
the United Kingdom, or anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, you're fighting at home. You've got 40,000 fans cheering you. You're going to get a bump on the scorecards. So that's just the way it's always been.
Clearly, because Murray won this fight, in my opinion.
Yeah, I also thought Murray won. I thought that he got a little bit of a slow start in the first couple rounds, but from around round 4 to 10, I thought Murray was the clearly in control. And I gave Martinez the last couple rounds, but I didn't think that was enough.
Well, on our shows, Andy, from time to time, we tend to say it's not how you start,
it's how you finish.
And we finished strong. And your boy, Maravilla, did not finish strong there. But who did finish strong? In the Barclays Center, Zab Judah and the junior welterweight champion, Danny Garcia. It was a great fight. I didn't think it would be that good because of Zab Judah's last showing, not against Vernon Paris, but against Amir Khan. Vernon Paris was empty calories, if I can use that term. He was pumped up, but he wasn't that guy to stand in front of Judah and fight him.
No, I mean, I saw Vernon Paris fight, I think it was a semi-retired version of Emmanuel Augustus, and I thought Augustus beat him. So I mean,
I was there in Detroit.
That's right, I was there too.
Yeah.
The crowd did not, it was in Detroit, and I don't think the crowd thought.
And Paris is from Detroit.
Yeah.
So, he didn't look good, but stats to Judah, who, even though he lost the fight, he showed something we didn't think he had left in him, did he not?
Yeah, he did. He did. And it's too bad he didn't show that kind of grit when his physical skills were at their peak. If you look 5 or 6 years ago when he had the speed, when he had the power, and yet he'd mentally check out of fights. And then here he is against Garcia, and he doesn't have the same kind of speed. He doesn't have the same kind of power. He's durability, he was dropped a couple times, and yet there he is fighting his heart out the last 4 or 5 rounds, and it's just a shame we didn't see Zab do that, when he was in his prime.
He shook Garcia a couple times.
Yeah, he did, and, I think Garcia's put some wins together, but it's not a good sign struggling with that kind of version of Zab.
But again, he's putting himself in line for a fight on the farewell tour of Floyd Mayweather. Danny Garcia is.
Yeah, he has.
And so when you look at the 140-pound, 147-pound divisions and you think about who's next, if you thought there was a lot of shit talking in the Garcia-Judah camps, wait until Paulie Malignaggi, the WBA welterweight champion, and Adrian the Problem Broner get in the ring in June.
I think that's a fight where the pre-fight talking will be more exciting, or exciting, I don't know if that's the right word, but more intense than the actual fight. Malignaggi's got nothing to offer Broner at this stage. A few years ago when he had his legs, I think he might have been a decent challenge because he could have used his range and stayed away. At this stage, Malignaggi's more of a flat-footed guy. He's still got the jab, but his defense consists of jabbing and holding. And if he can't stay out of Broner's range, and he's not going to be able to, he's just going to get beat down.
So even the fact that Broner is going up 2 weight classes is not going to be an issue for the competition he's facing?
No, Malignaggi's not really bigger than him. I mean, Malignaggi's, a bloated 140-pounder. He's fighting a welter because he can't make 140 anymore.
Right.
I don't think that's much of a challenge for Broner.
Truth be told, Broner knows that Malignaggi is an easy mark at welterweight for him to go up and fight.
Of course.
Right.
And to get a strap, which makes him look sexier in the pound-for-pound analysis at the end of the day.
Well, he's not going to jump. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of... You hear, Manny's won 8 titles in different weight classes, and people don't really care, I guess. The average fan doesn't really care about the caliber of fighters that they beat. So, yes, I mean, Broner's getting a strap. It'll add to his resume. And, I mean, that will, help boost his... credentials, but I mean, this is the easiest possible titleist he can go after right now.
You sound so disgusted talking about it, right?
So most people don't care about that stuff.
Well, let's talk about what people...
I'm not so much disgusted because I can see why Broner's doing it, but as far as a fight I'm looking forward to, I'm not looking forward to this.
No doubt. Well, a lot of people were looking forward to May Day, Floyd Mayweather and Robert Guerrero. And people actually gave Guerrero, a guy who jumped up two weight classes like Bronner, who has had his own run-ins with Bronner as well, who gave him a chance against the great Floyd Mayweather. But alas, his ass was grass. What's that?
I think there was a lot of people who are just, you know, more hopeful than rational when it came to that fight.
But isn't that the case when it comes to guys in front of Floyd and has been for quite some time now?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the amount of hype that goes into the fight beforehand and the price people are paying. You hope you're going to get something that your brain tells you you're not. And I think that was the case here of Guerrero. I mean, Guerrero struggled with featherweight opponents. Guerrero, I don't know if you saw the Orlando Salido fight from years ago. Mm-hmm. And Guerrero's claim to fame heading in was beating Andre Berto. And, I mean, we saw from Victor Ortiz beating Andre Berto, that doesn't really mean a whole lot.
This is a stepping stone to get a check from Floyd Mayweather.
It's a stepping stone to get a check, yes. Yeah. It doesn't mean a whole lot.
Well, in a virtuoso performance that I actually scored, you know, 120 to 108, which means that Floyd won every round. And I wanted to be extremely generous. I was given Guerrero one round.
Yeah, I think that's a fair score. I think, you know, the first two rounds and that, you know, you can maybe make an argument for Guerrero winning, although I didn't think he did. And then there was one round later on, I think it was the ninth, where Floyd just seemed to take the round off. I mean, perhaps that was the round he hurt his hand and he just wanted to reassess the situation. So those are the only three rounds you could remotely give Guerrero, and that's being generous. So, I mean, it was a shutout virtually.
We talk about, like, you know, a stepping stone to getting a check. Like, everyone wants to fight money because that's the money is, right?
Right.
Is he going to get, I mean, he just got the 6-fight deal. Is he going to get challenged before he's gone?
Well, I mean, a lot of that's up to him. You know, is he going to risk it against bigger guys? I mean, if he can get $32 million for fighting a guy like Guerrero, what's the incentive for him to step up and fight guys at 154, 160?
Yeah, but all right. So, and here's the thing. In a risk-averse Floyd Mayweather, who has done everything in his power to make sure he doesn't get in one of those fights. And I think the Miguel Cotto thing kind of brought him back to earth because Miguel, who's a quality boxer at one time, took him to task a little bit.
Yeah, he did. He pushed Floyd more than we've seen Floyd pushed in many years.
And so I guess in that, and to Dwayne's question, you know, who's next for Floyd Mayweather? We talked about Garcia possibly being someone who's in line. A couple of 140-pound guys who would step up to 147 to fight Floyd. Even, of course, everyone wants to see him fight Canelo Alvarez. So let's talk about Canelo first.
I mean, from what Floyd said, he doesn't think that fight needs to happen right now. Canelo says he wants to fight again on the 14th of September. Floyd says he also wants to fight on the 14th. I don't think they'll be fighting each other, though.
No. And if they did fight, there are some restrictions that would happen. Would there not be?
Well, you never know. I mean, Floyd's the guy calling the shots usually, but because Canelo's a draw in his own right and is capable of, you know, Canelo can, you know, pick his spots as well with opponents where he doesn't need to challenge himself every time out. So from Canelo's perspective, I wouldn't put any restrictions on myself if I was him against Floyd. If Floyd doesn't want to take the fight with a full-size Canelo, if I'm Canelo, I just keep earning my millions against, you know, lesser guys.
Yeah, because it would be a mistake of Chad Dawson-esque proportion for him to come down and wait to fight Floyd at 47, which he won't do.
Yeah, I think it's impossible. I don't think his body can get down to 147.
Okay, so they fight at 54. Does Floyd put him on a scale and say, you can't weigh more than 160 for the fight?
You know, but Canelo steps into the ring at 170 pounds. So even that, if you're Canelo, he physically can't do that.
Yeah. So this is a fight that probably won't happen.
Yeah, I mean, if Floyd is going to put restrictions on, then I don't think the Floyd can. I don't think the fight can happen.
So who do you see next for Floyd?
You know what? I think, I mean, there's a chance it's Devon Alexander. He's fighting next weekend against Lee Purdy. It's a fight he's, you know, very likely going to win. So he's an option. You know, Peterson and Matisse are fighting next week as well. If the winner of that, hopefully, will fight Danny Garcia. And then the winner of that, I think, would be a legitimate opponent for Floyd. You've got Amir Khan. I mean, his stock has gone down in the last couple of years.
Drastically.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, that's another option for Floyd. I mean, if they had that fight in the UK, you could put in a stadium and it would do really well. And I don't think Floyd would be at much risk of, you know, we've talked already about fighters going on the road and not getting a fair shake in the cards. But I can't see Amir Khan's chin lasting 12 rounds with Mayweather right hands.
No, not all night. As accurate as he is. Nah. Well, Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports wrote that Floyd Mayweather is an all-time great but could never be the greatest of all time because of the opponents he's faced. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I agree. I just, you know, the level of opposition that someone like Ray Robinson had to face on a regular basis was significantly greater than it is today. Now, that's not to say that, you know, it's impossible for Floyd to raise his all-time profile. And, I mean, he could do it by facing a guy like Canelo. He could do it by facing a guy like Martinez. But, I mean, is it worth adding to your all-time credentials if you're also going to put yourself in danger? So, I mean, I think Floyd's already made it clear that he's, you know, he's welterweight is probably his limit. You know, I mean, Sugar Ray Robinson fought Joey Maxime. He gave up 16 pounds going for the light heavyweight title. He lost the fight, but the fact that he tried to do it, the fact that he was beating Maxime.
He was winning the fight.
He was clearly winning the fight. And, you know, that even though he lost, I think that adds to his all-time credentials. And if Floyd was to challenge Canelo, if he was to challenge Martinez, even if he didn't win, if he had a really strong showing, I think that would raise his all-time status.
So does this go back to what I was saying in the beginning about John Bones Jones and Anderson Silva?
I think it's a little bit different. I know I saw the parallel too as we were talking about it, but I think the thing is Floyd is very protective about, you know, what he does and fights he takes and how he's perceived. And I agree with Andy, but I don't think it would happen because is Floyd going to take that chance?
No, I don't
think he didn't have to.
And you know, he does have to because Silva will be the pound for pound. He will. Right. He doesn't take that fight.
And so Floyd's pound for pound right now.
Yeah, but he's not going to be the greatest of all time. He's not the greatest of all time if he doesn't take
that
fight.
Well, you know, and Andy and I had this conversation yesterday, and we talked about the difference between Ray Robinson having to fight 60 fights in a row to make what Floyd makes in a year.
Right.
So it's a different time.
Of course.
It's a different time.
And you have to. I think you have to bear that in mind when you're talking about the greatest of all time. But you know what? We can go on and do this ad nauseum. Andy, want to thank you for coming out and being a part of the All Balls Don't Bounce experience. Tell everyone where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter, Grumpy Old Sport. You find me writing for Bad Left Hook and The Cruelest Sport. And yeah, it's been great being on the show. Thanks, Will. Thanks, Dwayne, for having me.
That was Andy Fruman, Grumpy Old Sport.
He was a good sport.
I thought he was, you know. But that's what we do on this show. We talk about sports and the story behind the story.
All balls don't bounce.
And let's talk about your favorite and my favorite, of course, the NCAA.
That institute, that bastion of integrity that they are.
That they are. And in this case, I think we're talking about football. Okay. I think we're talking about recruiting. I think we're talking about how the coaches can contact these recruits. And now with smartphones and social media, they wanted to tweet and, you know, reach out and touch someone via text.
Right.
As much as they wanted to. Well, now the NCAA is looking to suspend that part of their rules, saying that you can't have unlimited text and talk time.
So are they going to send the Verizon guy to, like, the schools check out their records and stuff?
No,
like,
I think they're going to send the T-Bumbles guy. No, not T-Bumbles.
T-Mobile?
Can you hear me now? Is that T-Mobile or Verizon?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they need like some bootleg, Metro PCS or some shit like that.
Well, going back to Baltimore being the place to get the baby piss.
The burners.
Get the burner. They can't track the phones.
Wow. Well,
whatever. You know what? It doesn't matter. They're going to get to these kids however they want to. No matter if the kid says, hey, you know what? I don't want you to contact me at this time. And I don't understand why the rule is different for college football, but not that way for college basketball. The two revenue-driving sports.
That don't make no sense.
Well, but it's the NCAA. What does make sense with them?
No, it doesn't a lot. It's interesting that some of the schools are actually now getting concerned with the practices of some of the athletic apparel manufacturers that they have.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, these guys are holier than thou.
Yeah, right. Well, Adidas is in hot water with a lot of the schools that they provide apparel and footwear for.
Let me guess. Sweatshop practices?
Yeah, sure.
Wow.
And I don't know. Again, you talked about being holier than thou.
Right.
This Adidas has apparently, according to the United Students Against Sweatshop Unions, or whatever it says.
United Students Against Sweatshops, actually.
And other worker rights advocacy. I can't say advocacy.
Avocado.
Avocado.
Claims
Acapulco.
Adidas is refusing to pay $1.8 million in legally mandated severance owed to the 2,800 workers of PT Kaizon, which is a sweatshop in Indonesia.
That makes things for Adidas as well as Nike. And the Dallas Cowboys, who are a standalone entity.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones, you're the best. There was a big Twitter beef online just recently between Darren Revelle.
And Dave Zirin, our friend of the podcast. No doubt.
They were talking about Nike sweatshops. But in this case, Adidas, including some of the schools like Wisconsin.
Yep.
And the University of Michigan.
Your school.
They have a $60 million deal. The most lucrative of all the deals.
Because they do all the apparel. It's not certain sports. It's like they got everything on lock.
Well, they've, you know, given Adidas 60 days to rectify the situation. Because they don't want that attached to their schools, of course.
I'm surprised that they're actually stepping out like this. I mean, you know what it's kind of like? It's kind of like with apparel. And you know that their practices, you know, Nike, Adidas, all these companies aren't the best. You just know it.
Well, I was wondering about a certain guy's practices that were very familiar because in Texas, and I'm on Texas a lot, even though their state motto is don't mess with Texas.
Exactly.
I'm messing with Texas right now, even though he plays for the Buffalo Bills right now.
Uh-huh.
Mario Williams. I think
I have my opinions on this, but let's go.
That I want to offer him a solution in song. He needs a structured settlement, and he needs cash now. Call J.G. Wentworth, 877-CASH-NOW.
I was waiting for a top 10 hit. You know, maybe an oldie hip-hop track, whatever. And I got the jingle. If you don't know, Mario Williams is suing his ex-fiance. Why? They got engaged.
Right.
Like Beyonce said, he put a ring on it.
Put a ring on it.
Probably was a little more than a ring because it's a $785,000 10-carat diamond.
Hey, yo, and it was E-class or E-color grade and VS2 clarity.
You don't know about that shit. What's all talking about an engagement ring?
Don't worry about that. Okay. It's none of your business.
So basically, the engagement's been broken off. She broke it off.
10 carats, though, yeah.
Heisman specified why. He said, give me my ring back.
He didn't say just give me my ring back. He also said that in the year, he gave her, you know, that Malcolm and Martin, that African-American Express card.
Word.
He gave her the black card. Right. She spent up $230,000.
Yeah.
He wants that back too.
Okay. So this is Sweets' perspective on this. Anything you gave her while you were dating, whatever, you let it go, right?
You sound like Judge Mathis right now.
But the ring, she doesn't want to be married to anymore. Why keep that ring? Like, the ring goes back. The other shit were gifts. The ring comes back.
I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I would want the ring back, but I don't think I would have done it like he did.
Yeah, but he asked for the ring back, and she said no, obviously.
She wants to keep it. I bet she pawns it.
Exactly. That's why she's keeping it. She wants to sell it.
It's worth $785,000.
It's not her ring. She said she doesn't want to take that step in the holy matrimony. That's fine. You can respect that. Give the ring back. Why would you want the ring if you're not getting a marriage?
Because the ring looks good and it's worth $750,000.
She should give it back. The other stuff, you got to suck it up.
Hey, you know what? That's what you get for being a simp. That's you pay.
I'm waiting for your transition on this one.
Why? Because LeSean McCoy was a simp?
Very good, sir.
Because he thought, and it's funny because he's young.
But that's why he's a simp.
Right. He went out and he said that, you know, Michael Vick, his quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles.
The old grumpy Vick.
Yeah, right. couldn't beat him at 40. Okay. And I'm not talking about Old English or Slits Malt Liquor.
St. Ives?
No St. Itties. None of that. In the 40-meter dash.
40-yard dash. 40 meters is something different.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm in Canada
now. I know. I get that, though.
And you know what? I didn't have a Big Mac or a quarter pounder with cheese at a Royale with cheese. But in the 40-yard dash, 32-year-old Michael Vick beat 24-year-old LeSean McCoy.
There you go. Boom.
So, I guess...
Shock went up for the older guys.
Well, you know, reports of his speed demise have been greatly exaggerated, clearly. And shout out to the old guys.
Oh, exactly.
Had to give it up to Vic, yo.
Well, the guy who can't beat Michael Vick in a 40...
He can't beat anyone in anything except losing.
And T-Bowing.
Yeah, is the world's most influential athlete. How? Tim Tebow.
How? You got to remember. So Forbes has named Tim Tebow as America's most influential athlete.
Is it the world or America's? Oh, America's most influential athlete.
Now, it's kind of funny because, I mean, at the time they did this, he was on an NFL team. As we all know, he's not. But,
here's the thing. What tripped me out is that it's supposed to be America's most influential athlete. Guess who came in third? Usain Bolt from that U.S. Territory called Jamaica.
That colony, right? Michael Phelps was second, and right. Derek Jeter followed Usain Bolt. It's kind of funny that he's considered influential, considering the fact that...
It's the whole Christian thing? Is that what you're thinking about?
Well, I mean, was this a calendar year event? Like, how? I don't understand. Like, because he's no longer influential.
His PR people are great. I can't front on Tim Tebow's PR. They keep him relevant, even though he doesn't have a team. He's not going to come to Canada and throw. Warren Moon told him, come on, dog. You couldn't throw on that short field. You can't throw on this one.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how he's influential, except for the fact that he's not.
Well, you would think they would recognize someone like talking about influence.
Well, Chris Cluey. Yeah, but I was thinking more about Geno Smith, the new quarterback in New York for the Jets. You know, did he take Tim Tebow's place? We don't know because, and we spoke about Geno before on the show. Had a great pro day, completed 60 of 64 passes, but they came out with all kinds of, you know, and they did that to Cam Newton. They did the same thing to Vic. Well, they probably did. I don't know.
Yeah, but, well, that guy is on everybody every year. So
RG3 faced the same treatment, that he wasn't nice to people, that he wasn't this, he wasn't that. You know, he didn't, you know, clean up after he ate a sandwich, whatever. And so Geno Smith goes to the hottest and biggest media market in the world with all this stuff on him about, you know, not being the guy he claims to be. And he says he has thick skin. He doesn't care, but it's going to be a problem in New York, especially with the
of all media markets to be in, and especially what they've had to deal with the quarterback.
Well, he was supposed to be the first quarterback picked, and he wasn't.
Yeah,
and so you know, it's going to be an interesting year as usual for the New York Jets, who have jettisoned a lot of their players, including Darrell Revis. He's now in Tampa Bay, and I guess now that Revis is there, I want to send a shout out to Rondé Barber, who now retired after 16 years, and he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he will be a Hall of Famer, I'm sure. Who won't be a Hall of Famer? Maybe in football, but maybe for his outspoken nature
off the field.
Is the former punter. Notice I said former.
Yes, you did.
Punter of the Minnesota Vikings, Chris Cluey.
who is, and to some degree, people have said that he was cut because of his outspoken nature.
Well, that's been a question that's been raised. Obviously, he's spoken a lot about gay rights. And, you know, and some people thought that may have been a distraction to the team, and they don't want to have to deal with, you know, someone being, you know, an ambassador for gay rights.
So you can't, you can't have an opinion, basically, in the NFL.
That's very valid. In pro sports,
I'm just
sometimes
asking.
It's not frowned upon. Now, they're not say, you can't say conclusively. I mean, obviously, you know, they were very kind enough to do it earlier enough so we could find the land with another team, but he feels
it. But
know,
if you were to say that part of, think about the two guys, or three guys, and Scott Fujita, Brendan Ian Badejo, and Chris Cluey, who all stepped out in support of gay marriage and equal rights. Cluey and Ian Badejo are free agents. They don't have a team.
Mm-hmm.
And Fujita retired.
Right.
Well, I don't know. Are we connecting dots where there are none?
Hey.
I don't think so.
That's what we do. We're the weapons of media deconstruction.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, it's also very important for us to talk about how we deconstruct the media and how we collect those checks by doing so.
Or how others collect those checks.
Well, you know,
sometimes inappropriately.
Well, I don't know if it's inappropriate.
Okay.
I don't know if it's inappropriate.
I'm listening.
If you haven't heard about this story, Ben McLemore from the Kansas Jayhawks.
Or upcoming NBA lottery pick.
He's definitely going to be in top five lottery picks.
Mm-hmm.
His AAU coach said that he was paid cash and other benefits, no matter what that is, to sway McLemore to leave.
Always makes me think they're sexual, but go on.
Yeah, that's funny.
$10,000.
Well, they said to leave Kansas and declare for the draft. Here's the best part to me. He took the money and the benefits, then he snitched. So you know it's extortion all day.
Yeah.
How are you going to take it and then snitch?
I know.
That's lame.
That's crazy.
That's lame. But anyway, the guy, the coach, Darius Cobb, said that someone from Hoop Like Academy, Rodney Blackstock, paid him $10,000. And they sent him to meet agents and stuff like that so McLemore could leave.
The thing about this is that McLemore leaving was like the worst kept secret. Almost, well, Shabazz Muhammad was the worst kept secret because it wasn't a secret.
Right.
But I mean, everyone expected after his freshman campaign, he was going to go. So what happens? Are they going to find Kansas? Is that what's going to happen then?
Well, Kansas is investigating and seeing what's going on. But for right now, it doesn't even matter because he's no longer a player at Kansas. And I'm sure he's going to, you know, it may come back. The messed up part, let me not slander Ben McLemore in this.
Right.
Because he didn't take any.
We don't, exactly.
And we don't know the facts of what he was involved in or not.
Right.
These are people that are supposedly representing him, and they're not doing a great job of it right up the gate.
Yep.
But let's talk about the 800-ton gorilla in the room. Well, as we shut him down.
Is it a gorilla, really? I mean, it's not, you know.
Well, to some people, it is. You know, if you think about it, and you know what? The show came out, the last show we did.
Yeah.
This article came out right after we did the show.
I know. It's a shame we just missed that.
But here's the thing. We talked about, it was called The Shift.
Dude.
Because the winds of change were blowing in sports.
And we talked about a lot of gender issues in that show, too.
Yes, sir. I'm just saying. And with Jason Collins coming out and saying that he's gay.
Are you trying to insinuate that Jason Collins may give us a tip?
Before we want him to give me a tip, dog. I'm sorry.
Well, let's talk about the tip that John Amici is giving to the English Premiership players.
Well, supposedly there are 8 players that are wanting to come out, but they can't because of insensitivity to, you know, guys being gay playing soccer in England.
And if you listen to All Balls Don't Bounce, much like we'll allude to earlier in terms of not having a lot of good news about footy.
No.
They're not even, I'm going to say the T word. I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to say the T word.
The T word.
To different ethnicities.
It's
never
terrible.
Mind different sexual orientations.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, you know, we had the civil rights movement.
Well,
they haven't had the civil rights movement even in football yet.
Well, let's get to this.
You think about a guy like Craig Hodges.
Yep.
Who was excommunicated from the NBA for what he said to George Bush after the Bulls won a title. He never got back into the league. I mean, he was a shooting coach for a little bit. Once Phil was gone, he was gone.
Yep.
And everybody like got on his case. But everyone is supporting Jason Collins because he came out and said he was gay. Why don't you support Craig Hodges' right to say what he wanted to say?
Yeah, but that's... Are you really comparing those...
No, I just brought it up because I thought about it. Like, how...
I'm only going to say something. I'm going to steer you back to football.
Because...
The thing is, there's been advancements in the NBA in terms of whether it's players, coaches, management level, whatever, right?
Fine.
But talking about football, it's still years behind.
And Amici spoke about that.
Right.
But here's a guy who came out who's a veteran of the NBA, also a center, just like Jason Collins. And I don't know if they've spoken, but you think about the people who have come out and spoken about Jason Collins speaking out and saying that he was gay. You see Chris Broussard, who is, you know, I don't think he's been suspended or fired or anything.
No.
But ESPN apologized for his views. They asked him for his opinion, and then they didn't want to accept it. They asked him on their own show, outside the
host. The host, I mean, if ESPN knew what he was going to say, they wouldn't have asked him.
Well, that's the point. Why do you have to know?
Because they ask everyone, what do you think? This guy's gay. And they want everyone to say, that's great, that's amazing, whatever.
Right, and that's my problem. And that's why I brought up Craig Hodges. Why can't they say, oh, okay, he stood up for what he believed in. Why can't he be supported the same way that Jason Collins was? Even Tim Brando, another commentator who does March Madness and everything, he's a veteran commentator, said, you know, why are people getting down on me? I don't come out and have a press conference or an SI article that says, you know, I'm a straight Christian man. So people are on his case about that, you know? And it's really tough. And you think about somebody like, of all people to be insensitive, the mailman.
The Mexican hunter?
Yes. See?
Sorry.
Karl Malone. even came out in support. But what Karl Malone said, I thought, was kind of key when he says, because when they were interviewing him, they knew where they were going to go with him. The Magic Johnson thing.
Of course.
And what did he say here?
That I ever once, he said, let's just cut to the skinny. I'm proud of the young man. It's about time that we stop wasting so much time on what a person prefers.
Yes. But here's the thing. Are we wasting time? Are we?
No.
Why?
Because we're out of time.
Very good. Very good.
And you know what? We'll have a chance to discuss these issues and many more on episode number 72.
Yes, sir. Where we'll possibly be making a big announcement.
Sure, hopefully.
No, I'm saying one way or the other, it's going to be a big announcement.
Exactly. Okay.
So where can they find us, sir?
On Twitter at @ABDmedia, on Facebook.com/ABDmedia, where all the footnotes will be posted for this episode. Oh, we didn't do our giveaway, man.
We do have a book to give away, don't we?
On These Courts.
Wayne B. Drafts.
Basically, in a nutshell, Penny Hardaway, who we alluded to at the top of the show.
Yeah.
Returns back to Memphis to coach his middle school team, the state championships.
And it's a great story. It's a Disney movie in waiting.
Yeah. If you follow Penny during his career, there's a lot of references and story anecdotes in there that, you know, he touched on.
And there are some sad cautionary tales as well.
Yeah.
That, you know, are in the book.
So email us, allballsdon'tbounce@gmail.com.
And if you, I guess, the first person to
write. Yeah, we'll just take the first person, man, because that shows someone's listening top to bottom. We'll send you a copy of the book. But yes, also iTunes Music Store and Stitcher Radio.
Oh, you just jacked my shit, right?
Oh, shit. I said I wasn't supposed to say it.
All good. It's all good.
Well, you did two today.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, but one of them was like kind of, you know.
They got to be different. They got to be different.
No doubt. So until next week.
I am.
Or I guess not next week.
Next time.
Because I was thinking about one-on-one.
I know. It overlap, which we also, you should definitely check on a Stitcher Radio.
Yes. But until 2 weeks from now.
I am Dwayne Tweets Watson.
I am the entrepreneurial Wall Street, Will Strickland. Rich kid, you know what you do. do that thing, and we get out with that 2013 swing. All Balls Don't Bounce, part of the Gone Network. Easy.
Put your game face on, get ready for the tip-off. First pitch, puck drop, first swing, kickoff. Now your regular sports show, we bring the realest in the world of sports. You gotta hear it, see it, and feel it. On field, on court, wherever you're playing. Forget all the gimmicks, cause you're speaking on the game. Wall Street Strickland, E-Sweets Watson. Giving y'all the latest in sports, or what's popping. It's four corners of absolute rawness. If you ever need support, knowing who's on the court, you call. From the pop fly save to the Super Bowl phase, it's from the first round seed to the top of the league, you know it's.